sincerely, like, this has been a growth opportunity for the extended family too, is like, you know, over the years I've talked to my mom, like, yeah, I'd love to buy it. And she's like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of interested too. And so we got down the pipe on this one, and she's like, well, you know, I want to be an investor with you. And I don't, okay. So let's talk through, what does this mean?
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Expert Corner interviews, where we get the pleasure of talking to short-term rental investors who have navigated this world and are willing to share their experience, the ups, the downs, and everything in between. And today we've got the pleasure of talking to Mr. Ed Combs. Ed, I appreciate you joining me today.
Sean, I'm thrilled to be here. It's like a coming true moment. I've been listening to the podcast for years, and we'll get into it, like the years part. But yeah, I'm thrilled to be here and be a guest.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you joining us. And we were talking before we hit record, your lovely wife, Miss Ann Combs, is not able to join us because she's got, you know, running a million different directions with just regular life stuff. And so you said, well, I'm going to do my best to represent that, you know, her as well as possible. And so we're going to, you know, it was definitely a team effort for you guys. And so I wanted to make sure we mentioned that as well. Right.
Yeah, it's 100% a team effort. And so I know she wanted to be here, but you know, getting pulled in multiple directions is the
I get it. Right. And so awesome. Well, listen, I always like to start with just the backstory, because, you know, it's funny. I always start with like, hey, what pays the bills? Where'd you grow up? What got you interested in real estate investing? What got you interested in short-term rentals? And start that. I always like to start the conversation there, just because it's so funny how similar a lot of us are, and we always feel like we're so different, and we're like, oh, you know, but a lot of us are, you know, in that same situation. When you're listening, like you said, you've been listening for years, I'm sure you heard people talk about their journey into it, and you're like, I'm kind of there. So take me back a little bit. Tell me the backstory.
Oh, it's so funny. I mean, I've heard you ask this question of so many guests, and I got to be playful with you. You know, I'm a therapist, so I got to start with like, well, it starts with my mom, you know. No, just right? But you know, like, mom does have a part in the story. But look, my wife is a dentist. I'm a financial planner and a couples therapist. I try to bring those things together. And I think you've been using vacation properties for a long time, and I've more the entrepreneurial mindset. And so I was like, oh, this would be great to own our own place. We've been going to Lake James, which is a property that we learned how to buy properly through your program. Mm-hmm. But that question of like, how do we do this? I have no idea. Even though I'm a money guy, I'm a certified financial planner, I'm like, I don't know how to deal with this type of investing. Like, what are the numbers? What are the expectations? And so I was just listening to a variety of different podcasts, trying to figure out how to get this to fly. And yours just resonated with the authenticity and the real stories of folks. And so I just kept listening and listening. And then a couple of years ago, I proposed it to my wife, like, hey, I think we should do this. And let's just say she wasn't real thrilled about the idea at that point in life.
Right.
But, you know, a couple of years went by. We actually had a call with you guys a couple of years ago. And this is part of what impressed me so much, is it was very clear you wanted to help, but you're also like, hey, you got to do this on the right timeline for you. Like, we want to move people to action, but like, you got to do it when it's going to work for you and your wife. Yeah. And I really respected that. And so my wife and I had some hard conversations about where I needed to get with my business for her to feel comfortable for us to take this, that. And so I did a couple of years of hard work on my own business to get it straightened out. And I was like, property popped up, and I was like, oh, I guess it's go time. Here we go.
Yeah. That's awesome. And so been on, which is very common, right? I think for a lot of us, we're sitting on the sidelines, but like trying to actively be on the sidelines, actively listening, actively learning, figuring out when that timing is right. And it's never perfect, right? It's the perfect time's never going to come. But I appreciate you bringing that up with like saying, hey, listen, we want to kind of sometimes spur people to action and push them to that next step. If they really have these dreams and aspirations, if they're in the right spot, but there are times when you really do just need to, you know, get everything else in order, right? There are times that it's just not quite the right time. And so, you know, you were navigating that, and I appreciate you bringing that up, because I feel like there's people in that situation, and it's hard to recognize when we're using timing as something to hold us back from our dreams versus is right. like, because it is a fine line. There isn't a perfect time, but there's also times when it's not really the right time, right? It's not real responsible. Yeah. I mean, this is an asset class that takes a decent amount of time and money on the front end. And that's you don't want to put your back against the wall when it comes to those things, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think for us, like I had just completely reconfigured my business and I was in a little point of like, what am I doing with my life? And so that was also like, oh, well, maybe I'll be this real estate investor guy. And my wife was like, no. Like you've been on this path. You need to get this settled first, right. Like figure this out. And so, you know, and look, my business is working with couples around money topics. And that topic that comes up the most is like when someone makes a decision against the other partner's will or in secret. Yeah.
Right.
Like that just doesn't fly well.
Right.
And so you got to figure out between the two of you, what it's going to take to feel comfortable to go into this together.
Yeah. Such an interesting combination to me. Financial planning, couples therapist, because you know, you always hear the number one problem in relationships is money. And it's like, you're taking both of those expertise and like trying to solve those problems, which I think is brilliant. By the way, I think it makes a lot of sense to be able to have expertise on both sides of that coin, but it's obviously being a money guy, financial guy, being a relationship type of a guy where you really understand, hey, listen, this is a team effort. This isn't something that one person goes and says, I'm doing this, right? I tell this to people all the time. I literally had a call yesterday and somebody told me and said, hey, I'm all in, I want to do this. You just got to convince my wife. And I said, I'm not in the wife convincing business. And so I don't get paid enough to be in the wife convincing business or the husband convincing business, right? These are major financial decisions. They're major life decisions. These are decisions you make together. And I tell people that all the time. I said, this is not something you go out and do on a whim. And this is absolutely something, if you have a spouse involved, that these are things you do together. And it was important for everybody. And I'm sure that wasn't the right couple's advice to that guy, but I was like, you guys need to sit down and make sure this actually fits into your plan together, not just your plan, but she needs to be involved in this conversation.
No, I think it was 100% the right advice on a couple of levels, right? Not my job, not my role, not my training.
Right.
But the right advice is like, dude, like, I don't want you getting in here. And then, I mean, Sean, the thing that I love about Vodacy is it's a community of folks. But if you get in this community and you got your wife that's angry at you and then you're in the community, it's like, it makes it messy. And it's like, you know, you go work with a couples therapist for a little bit and figure out why you guys are stuck.
Right.
And then come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Because normally you're going to have somebody on the other side of that. Your partner in crime, really, when you're married for life, and they don't want to hold you back from your dreams and the things you want to do. It's just a matter of making sure you're both on the same page with it. And so when just going back to your guys's stuff and your guys's journey in there, did you have any other real estate investing experience, being a financial planner? A lot of times it revolves a lot more around like retirement type investing and, stocks, all that stuff. It's not a lot of real estate, right?
No. Most of our trainings and my training was all on the stock and bond investing training. And so that was kind of my primary paradigm. You know, as I've gone through my career, I certainly have gotten exposed to more real estate investing, and I have colleagues that's what they spend a lot more time on, but it still wasn't like, man, this is a body of knowledge that I know or feel really great about. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I'm capable of learning financial concepts let's go, let's figure this out.
And you obviously were of the mindset that it was like, I don't want to figure this out on my own. I want to try to figure out, a path that can help me accelerate and maybe I can learn from a little bit versus just going down that school of hard knocks. Right. And so, which is why you listen to the podcast and listen to mine and other people's podcasts, probably read some books, looked at some stuff online to try to educate yourself on what you were going to walk into.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, whether it's in finance or relationships or any other area of life, it's like, you don't know what you don't know, and you're going to hit your head against the wall. But if you can have a couple wise guides or mentors along the way, you can miss a few of those walls. And when you do run into the wall, hopefully you can bandage yourself up and recover a little faster.
Right. And I think that too, tell me if you believe this to be true or not, but I feel like, I always tell people, I say, listen, it's having a mentor or coach or somebody that's been down the road before you doesn't always make the road easier, right? What I mean by that is it's still going to be work. It's still going to be tough when you're walking down it, but you know, people have actually made it. You know that people have actually been to the end of the road and they can put your arm around you and say, hey, listen, I know it's kind of hard right now, but we're going to get through this. Here's how we're going to navigate this. Here's how we're going to skip out some of those obstacles along the way that you don't need to have to navigate, right? But there are going to be times where we still have to walk down the road. And I'm wondering, from your standpoint of just walking down that road of getting into it, if you feel like that is accurate on how you feel about, like with our group, with the Bodicey family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's some very clear kind of clutch decision points about being in the group and having that support and having the group and you having traveled this road so many times, right? Like I got to that stage where you're talking about, okay, here's how to find your property manager. And I was got a little ahead of myself and I was trying to figure it out to myself and reach out to a few people. And then I got to your lesson and you said, well, one of the best ways to find a great property manager is just look at all the top listings in your market, use AirDNA and see who's managing it and start reaching out to all of them. Yeah. And I did that and it led to our property manager who I absolutely love working with now. And like, he's just been 5-star the whole way. And so having those frameworks, because it's like, okay, yeah, I know I need a property manager. You convinced me of that. But you got to get layers deeper into the detail of how to do that effectively and like your whole checklist. And here's all the questions to ask. And I was like, oh my God, Sean, I can't ask him this many questions. Like, that's just not right. He was like, no, if you're running a business, you have the right to ask all these questions.
Right.
And you need to, so that you know whether you're making a good decision or not. So.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. And sometimes like I always tell people, you know, we're not, this isn't rocket science. Like even just mentioning like, but like you said, you don't know what you don't know. It's not that there's not one silver bullet that we have that is some big secret recipe that we sprinkle on everything and makes everything work. It's just, man, when you've run down the road so many times, there's 100 golden BBs that you know where to shoot them and where to find them. And that's what makes the whole thing work. And it's something simple that like, hey, listen, if we're looking for a property manager, let's go look for the ones that are performing the best, the ones that are getting the most reviews and the ones that are operating at the top of these markets. And let's start there. Like maybe that's a good place to start. And then the other layers of what do we talk to him about? What do we ask him about? And that list of questions has come from all the things that we made mistakes from in the past saying, man, I wish I would have asked that at the front end. I wish I would have known that first, you know? And so that's why that list is a little bit longer sometimes, but it's really not that long. I mean, it's like 15 questions, right? It's like a 20 question list or whatever, but, and there's really three non-negotiables. You're like, which are the ones are the most important? We're like, okay, these three are really like, if we can't come to terms on these three, right, like I'm not negotiating on those. The other ones I'll negotiate on, type of a thing. But you don't know that, right? Unless you've actually made the mistake, and it's nice to not have to go make those mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. So take me in. So you were listening on the sideline. Then you found the property that you were excited about and thought, okay, maybe it's go time. Maybe we need a little bit of help. And then we dove in, or did you dive in and then start looking for the property?
Yeah, admittedly. So I had been, you know, on a realtor's email list and just getting those emails, and it was springtime of this year and I hadn't been looking. And then I was like, let me just look and see what Dave sent. And I looked and I was like, well, and you know, now I'm not in the program yet. I've just been listening to the podcast, but I'm like, I think this is it based on what my wife and I have said we want, like location on the lake, type of property, size, price. And so, you know, I talked to my wife and I was like, babe, I think this is it. I think this is the one. She's like, well, okay. Go look. And so it was a rainy day, drove out to the lake 2 hours away, met with a realtor, looked at the property and I was like, I think this is it. And so it was a little bit of definitely cart before the horse. Like I would encourage listeners to be in the program before they put in an offer, because there's a few things like the financing side that I would do differently this time. Like just bet, like I thought I understood DSCR loans and loan options. I would have shopped it out a little bit more. I know you got some great team members on in the program. Yeah. So you know, okay, but you got to keep playing the cards you're dealt, or that you take for yourself, and just you talk a lot about radical responsibility. So okay, just take responsibility for it. You got into it, now you got to figure it out. And so, talked with one of your team members and about the program, and what do I want to say, Sean? Yeah, we were in acquisition mode quick, and so I knew I wanted to get into this program and get going on it. And right from the beginning, though, that call was value, because it was like, you've talked about the design, but I didn't know my numbers, right? Going back to like cart before horse.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we got it put together, and, really had to deal with some financial mindset stuff, because it's like, this is how much you're going to need to spend to upfit it. Oh, 8 to 10% of the property acquisition price is your estimate.
That's one of the things that, like, as much as I love short-term rentals, and as much as I wish everybody knew this walking into it, is that there's a lot of money to be spent on the back end to set these properties up to operate toward the top of the market that a lot of people don't budget for, because they feel like, and maybe you guys are in that same, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but agree with me or disagree with me, but you buy a beautiful property on the lake, it's furnished pretty nice, and you're like, man, this location, the proximity is great. And then you hear somebody tell you, man, but okay, this is only going to work if you dump this much money into it and design and articulate it this way. And you're like, whoa, that's a lot more than I was planning on. Right. And that can be tough when you hear that news right then. And it is also, though, the biggest thing that gives us a competitive advantage in these markets is, one, us being willing to do it, but two, that 80% of our competitors don't do it because they don't have the money to get to the finish line. So they eliminate themselves as far as competition,
right
out of the gate. And we're able to elevate ourselves right out of the gate, but it is a drawback because it's capital intensive, right?
It's hugely capital intensive. And I think, I don't know if this came up in one of your lessons, but it is one of the things I wanted to share, is I think, that upfront investment to get it designed and launched, but there's also, like, if you're operating where you're going to come in on the backside of the peak season, have your cash flow buffer, be ready. Like, don't use all your money up, because, you're going to have unexpected expenses. And that's the phase we're in now, is like, okay, you guys told us what we're going to spend, but now, like, we just found out we've got to do a water tank storage system because we're on a well and the well doesn't have enough water in it to support the number of guests that we've got coming. So there's $6,500.
Right.
Yeah. And those are shocks. So, make sure you're leaving. Is
that something that would have come up in an inspection? I know you guys were quick on the acquisition side. Is that something that normally would have come up on an inspection with that well and the guests, like the water usage?
So I think the honest answer is I don't know. This is where my own inexperience comes up, is I'm used to city water, lived on a well. Sure. So there's questions I would ask about a well and a well inspection now. Yeah. And one of them is like, what's the capacity of the well? What's the volume of water? Because I think the volume of water is fine for normal residential use, but when you're putting 16, 18 people in the house, that's well above normal capacity.
Right.
And so that's part of what you need to think about when you're upfitting this house. If you're using above normal residential utilization, just be ready. Those systems are going to get taxed.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, the previous owner
is a common one that gets taxed. Yeah. In fact, a lot of markets now limit occupancy, not based on bedroom count. They base it on septic size.
Yeah.
And so, and wells are, I'm glad you brought up the well, because it's like you said, not everybody thinks about that. Most people have been hooked up to city water forever and they don't think about the water going down, because you're tapped in. Wells are not all created equal, and some are shared wells, some go dry, some don't have the capacity. Like, I live out west, and it's very common that wells go dry. And so you have to really understand the capacity and the capabilities of those wells that you're tapping into. Cause sometimes people think, oh, well's awesome. I don't have a water bill. Unlimited water source, whatever, right. But they are limited depending on the well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so those are, and I think it's also about being okay with, you're going to get in, even with the great coaching and support around you, is you're going to hit your head on some stuff, and that's okay. Yeah. Yep. It's part of the learning. It's part of the risk, and it's part of the reward, right? Is
right. At the end of the day, too, you did hit on something, especially that is very applicable this time of year as we're rolling into the fall and the peak season is over for a lot of people in those summertime markets, is the holding cost, right? Because if you don't have the benefit of all that buffer from the peak season revenue, and right, like when we always talk about the three things you really need to be careful budgeting around is the acquisition on the acquisition is the down payment, which most people are pretty dialed in with down payment because they know what kind of loan they're getting. But then the other two are where it's a wild card. The second is how much you're going to spend furnishing and setting it up. And then that third one that we always talk about is your holding costs. And we always say budget 6 to 9 months. And the reason I say 6 to 9 months is not because you're not going to have revenue during that time, but if you launch at the end of a peak season, it could take 3 to 4 months before you even start the next peak season and really get your real launch going. And that's where you guys are at with a lake home, right? And it's like, hey, listen, we really got it up and running at the end of the peak season, which is not ideal when it comes to revenue that first 12-month period. But it gives you a chance to work out some of the kinks, all that kind of stuff before a lot of people are in. I actually, if I budget it correctly, I always prefer to launch during a slow season and then let me work out the kinks so that when I hit my first peak season, truly, which for you guys is going to be next summer, is you really are in a position to maximize that revenue at that time.
Yep.
You know, but it's painful to get there, right? You're like, I got this house payment this whole time, right?
I mean, it's like nobody that I've met loves seeing red, right? You look at your P&L for the month and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
But it is, and I think that's the mindset work too, is like, okay, any 1 month, especially in the launch, maybe is not going to feel great. Mm-hmm. But like, let's give it a full year, run it the full cycle before you really make any final judgments about whether this has been a good or bad decision. I don't know about other people's brains, but my brain definitely wants to go bad decision, bad decision, bad decision, bad decision.
We naturally do. We look at the immediate, right? We look at today. We look at the immediate, like what's in front of us today. It's very difficult to take a long-term view of something, right? And the longer the time horizon you look at, the majority of investments, and you know this to be true being a financial planner, is you don't tell people, hey, let's look at this over the next month or two. Right. We don't look at that. We look at 5-year, 10-year, 15-year time horizons. And when you start to do that and you start to look at a year, 3 years, 5 years with typically any investment, real estate in particular, is, you know, you're like, man, this looks pretty good, even though that was pretty painful in the very beginning.
100%
And so I always say that, like, it's the lens we look through that determines, like, what is our feeling on this investment? And when you look from a longer term lens, you're almost always in the black, right? It's very difficult to be in the black, but you have to get there and you have to set yourself up to get there. And that's what, you know, one of the things that we try to do on the front end is to try to compress that time before we start to say, this was a great decision, right? I want you to say, this was a great decision 6 to 9 months from now, not 3 to 5 years from now, right? Because sometimes getting to that 3 to 5 years is difficult with certain investments.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to come back and circle back on that, like the acquisition property manager piece, because like, as we got in the program, got rolling on whether the numbers are, when I was talking to the property managers about like, what do you think the property could do? It was interesting to see what people came up with.
Yeah. And some of them, I totally agree with you, but I want you to expand on that.
So like the easily identifiable top property manager in the area was estimating somewhere 60% less than what the data was showing for what they thought we could do. And I was like, what are you got? Like, what? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not definitely not going to work if that's what we're going to do. But then, you know, my property manager that I landed with, he was like, I actually think we can push a little bit higher than what you're thinking. You know, here's where I'm coming from. Here's how I'm going to do it. And, you know, it's like, I mean, proof will be in the pudding, but having that data really helped evaluate, like, and get in the mindset of like, what are you thinking about on that? So I think it's just really important to go slow enough through the financial data, air DNA information, and really make sure you understand that before you get too far into talking to the property manager. And I think you have it sequenced so people don't do that, but
Yeah, it's and I'm going to expand on that a little bit because it's super, super important. Is we say this all the time, people are like I always tell people, you can't get your underwriting from anybody but you. You're writing the check. You're going to be responsible for that mortgage payment every single month. And so I'm trusting the numbers that I put together. So we have been painstakingly revising our underwriting process for years before we started teaching it, and really cross-checked lots and lots of properties on performance based on what we were underwriting. And so we feel really comfortable with that, but we want to have this baseline understanding of what we think this property is going to perform at. Because to your point, when you start asking realtors, property managers, and likewise of other people about what they think the revenue potential is, it will be all over the place. And it can be really confusing. And it can be like, okay, well, should I listen to this property manager that was 60% less than what I think I'm going to be at? And then I talk to another one who's a little bit more than where I think I'm going to be at. Like, where do I land? What is true? What is like, now most property managers, just for those of you listening, are going to be more like the former of saying, hey, listen, I think we're going to be less, because they're setting lower expectations. It's almost like they set themselves up to not have to deal with a problem child. It's like the number one call they get is, why isn't my property renting more? Why aren't you making more money? Or like, and they want to be able to, I already told you that, like, or else they say, oh, it's just the market, right? So it's the default answer for most property managers. And it seems odd, because if you're trying to get business, you want to say, no, I think you can do better. Like, come work with me and I can get you more money. It's not the case. Most property managers way undershoot the revenue projections on properties. Now, to their point, most properties they're not set up like we're going to set these properties up, right? So, to be fair, most properties that they have in their portfolio are nothing like what we would have as far what we call a Vodacy signature recipe property. And so they're just figuring out what is a fair share of business going to be. And usually that fair share of businesses does not pay the bills, and it just doesn't with acquisition prices. So most of them are going to undershoot it. But you have, by understanding the data and the underwriting, you're able to have those conversations and ask the questions, understand why they think about it. Like, the property manager you chose thought he could do a little bit better, and he told you why, right? He told you, here's the reasons what I think where we can push, and here's where I think we can do a little bit better. And it gives us a good baseline of who we feel like actually knows the market and doesn't. Like, it's almost a litmus test of who we feel like is pretty dialed in on the revenue of these, you know, the projections of these markets.
Well, Sean, this brings up another point that I didn't think about as we were talking about this, is when I was evaluating the property managers, you know, I went through and started looking at them, and there's a number that were just self-managed, and I was like, no. But when I went to his website and I looked at his other listings, I was like, oh, he gets it. Like, these are really nicely staged. They're well done. They're not full Vodacy, like, but they're
good properties.
As close as I could, you know, get. Yeah. And I looked at a few other property managers, and I looked at the properties they're managing. I was like, not to be rude, but I don't want to be associated with those properties. Yeah. Like, if that's what you're managing to, like, no thanks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's another important screening piece, is just like, really look at what is this property manager managing? And I guess you kind of, if you're picking properties at the top of the market, you're likely going to see good stuff, but
you're naturally going to see better properties. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And so when you were going through that and you were underwriting, and you know, now all of a sudden you know what the budget is for design. You guys use Ann Cisneck, which is awesome. She's one of our recommended designers, does a beautiful job. And so, and going into that process, how long did it take for you guys to decide, yeah, we're going to go all in on this, or we're just going to, because even within Vodacy family, like, we have certain people in the very beginning, and they're like, I don't know that I need to go all the way. And then their second, third property, they go all the way because they know how important it is. But sometimes it's hard to make that decision in the beginning on that full all the way design stuff.
You know, I think it was a little shock to the system, but my wife and I are both business owners. We're both entrepreneurs. And so, like, we've crossed that bridge, and like, it's, you know, it's penny wise, pound foolish to do it cheap on the front end and have to spend more money recreating it. Just get it done to the best you can with the resources you got. And that's where it's like, it's an extension of trust. It's like, if I trust you enough to pay to be in your program, then I probably ought to be able to trust you enough to take your recommendations. Yeah. Right. Like,
thank you for saying that. I always wonder that sometimes.
Right. Well, and because it is, and even with that, it's like, man, I don't know if this is right. This, like, you know, you get that anxious monkey going in your brain and it can be a little crazy. But no, we had really committed to, like, we're going to do it. We're going to do it to the fullest we can. We want to be at the top of the market. So if this is what they're saying it takes. And I think the other thing is, Anne just from the first pickup on the phone call, put us at ease about, like, I got this, this is what I do. And we were very straight with her. Like, this is our first time. We don't know what we're doing. And so I think that just made it easy to get in and start working with her on, you know, what's our vision for the property and what do we want it to be about?
Yeah. And then it all comes together and you see that finished product. Walk me through that, that stage of the process.
You know, I think there's overwhelming anxiety some days on, like, is this going to come together? How is it going to come together? What's it going to look like? But when we walked into the house and Ann was busy, you know, taking photos and getting it all for us, there was tears, there were smiles, and it really was a solidifying moment that, like, I don't want to say we had made a decision we're proud of. My wife has always said, I want to live in Charlotte. This is where we're at, you know. And after Ann left, she was like, I could live here.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's something. And, you know, so I think we're proud to show off the property to our friends. We post it on Facebook. Everyone's made all the comments. And so now I'm in this phase, Sean, where we're up there all summer, you know, getting it set up, doing what we could do. And then she made it beautiful. And we had like a week or two before it went live. And now, dang it, people are in our house using it. And I'm like, damn, I just want to be at my house and hanging out and enjoying it. Because, you know, like, and this may be a question that comes in a little bit, is like, what's our longer term goals? Is at least I'm always forward thinking. So I'm like, oh, now that I've done this, I want to do more of them. I think my wife has not crossed that bridge yet.
Right, right.
So I'll slow roll on that with her. Mm-hmm. It's a lifestyle asset for us. And so it's like, yeah, we needed to perform. It's like, so I know all that to say is, like, we're so happy that we spent the money to get it designed and looking great. And, you know, my kids' friends are like, when are we get to go back up to the lake house again?
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fun. I know that for me early on, and when I was just buying, you know, lifestyle assets, buying my first vacation rentals 20 years ago, almost now, it's 2006. It was really fun to show it off. I was still in my, you know, in late 20s, early 30s. Yeah. And in that phase of, you know, I wanted to buy the boats, I wanted to buy the cars, I wanted to show off the stuff I had, you know, and it gave, and it does feed a little bit of that ego of, hey, listen, we're really proud of this, right? I want to show it off. I want to do this. And it's fun to have a portfolio of properties that we're super proud of. Like one of the gurus online was talking about how lifestyle assets are dead and how you can't make any money with lifestyle assets, because if you set them up to where you want to use them it's not a true investment and everything else, which I'm like, hey, you keep talking, we do it every day, but it is a big piece of it for us. It is a big piece of why we got interested in them in the first place. It's a big piece of why we like to own them long-term, because we talked earlier about that long-term time horizon. It's a lot easier to hold an asset for 3, 5, 10 years when you love it, when it's a lot of fun, right? And it makes it pretty easy to continue to stack those assets. Maybe the next step is, you know, for you, it's like, hey, I'll buy the next one tomorrow. For Ann, you're like, she might want to wait a year or two, but that's okay, right? Start to build those and stack those assets, and they're fun to own the whole time, and you don't feel like I just got to get rid of them because it was a means to an end, and you have no interest in them. And that's my biggest argument with these types of assets is they're easy to hold, they're easy to keep because we love them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think one of the things I heard in the years of listening is, like, your kids are interested in business because the business you're in is interesting, right? Yes. And, like, that's a family value for us is I would say my wife and I are both reluctant entrepreneurs, but we've really grown into it as we've gone on almost 20 years of marriage now. And it's like, yeah, we want our kids to be confident. If they want to be entrepreneurs, we want them to feel confident that they can speak the language and get into deals. And let me just tell you, Sean, my kids are not asking me, Dad, how's the financial therapy practice going?
Right.
Tell me about those couples that are, no, they don't give two flips about that. They'd rather like, oh, you had a tough day talking to couples today, didn't you? It's more the like, yeah, but you know, going to the lake. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then how do we do this, Dad? What's this about? Like, what do we worry? Like, I've said this many, many times on the podcast, and you've heard me say this many times. I've never been around an asset class that families get involved in together like they do short-term rentals. And it's across the board from top to bottom, kids all the way, spouses, everything, which I love that part about this asset.
Well, and that's where I'll tie it in is, you know, I was teasing you about, you know, I'm a therapist and you said, what's the origin story? Well, it starts with my mom.
Right.
But like, sincerely, like this has been a growth opportunity for the extended family too, is like, you know, over the years I've talked to my mom, like, yeah, I'd love to buy it. And she's like, yeah, you know, I'm kind of interested too. And so we got down the pipe on this one and she's like, well, you know, I want to be an investor with you. And I don't, okay. So let's talk through, what does this mean, mom? And really what it came down to is she wasn't looking to make money. She wasn't looking to actually invest in the property. She just wanted to say, I love you and I'm proud of you and I want to support you.
Yeah.
And so she didn't become an investor in the property, but we went out to dinner one night before we closed and she just slid over a check and said, here's my contribution to support you and say, I love you. And it was just like, man, that, like, I'm getting teary even talking about it. Right. Because that's like that vote of confidence from your parents. And that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. It's a huge deal. And it's fun that, you know, she sees you doing something, like you said, hey, I'm proud of you. I want to be there for you, but not only, like you said, it's just that vote of confidence that you're just like, man, okay, that's awesome. And we do, you're right. I mean, it's like, it goes across the board. I can't tell you how many times we've taken my in-laws, my parents to our properties with us. And it's some of the funnest times they have, and just using them as lifestyle assets. My kids, last night we were sitting around the fire and we were talking and they were saying, you know what was one of the funnest trips that we went on is when we went to Georgia and we were looking for properties and they were, because they were going looking for their next property, for their property that we were going to partner with them on. And they remember that. And they remember, like, by the way, they did not buy a property because they ended up, we underwrote a bunch of them, but they still remember the underwriting process and not finding the right property and not having enough capital, right? They found some properties they wanted.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was Dad having to buy it, not those two having to put their fair share into it. So we said no, like, but the point of that is they're learning these things to the give and the take of investments. They're learning when you say yes, when you say no, what it takes to save up. And then, you know, 2 years later, they're saying, man, you know, one of the funnest trips is when we were going and underwriting properties and finding properties and walking through those. That was a lot of fun. We need to go look for some more properties again. And so it's fun to have that involvement from kids. Right. And
yeah.
You know, but like they don't care about Vodacy, right? They don't care about like the business of Vodacy necessarily, the coaching side of it and the mentorship side of it, but they do learn this entrepreneurship, business, budgeting, you know, underwriting, financials, when they're looking at investments that they're interested in. And I do think that there's a big part of me being a dad that loves that it's a way for them to kind of learn some of those things that they're going to use that, you know, for the rest of their lives, really.
Well, and Sean, like this is where my professional work really shows up. And that I think wasn't fully clear to me until we're saying it here on the podcast is like, what's the number one, if I could narrow it down to one of the biggest issues couples have around why they fight about money, either their parents never talked about money with between each other, but definitely not with the kids, or the parents fought about money all the time.
Right.
And so their brain is wired to be anxious about money.
Right.
And so when I hear you describing that story of like, and these stories of like, dad's just having honest, truthful conversations with his kids about money, their brain's just saying like, hey, it's easy. It's cool to talk about money. It's not a problem. It's part of life. And this is what we do. And we deal with disappointment, but it's not even disappointing because, hey, we had a good time checking it out and we'll come back and try again.
Right. And it didn't work. That was a kind of the point too, is that's what I was thinking too. And you're putting it together in like the real, like, you know, from the therapist viewpoint, but it's so true. And I didn't think of it that way, but it was one of their funnest times and it didn't work out. Right. It wasn't the end goal was for them to find a property, to buy a property. They didn't buy the property, but it still was one of their funnest learning experiences, one of their funnest trips that they went on. And I think that's great. Like you're so right. Like money is this like taboo thing where it's either it's anxious and you're fighting and you're this and that and the other. And as you're talking about it out loud, it's making me realize that's probably why I love that kids and families get involved in this stuff, because we just aren't taught that stuff in schools. We just really aren't. You know, we're just not. And at home, most of the time, it's stressful. And, you know, and so it's like when it's stressful, and a lot of times parents hide it from their kids because it's stressful and it's anxious. And they just, you know, we grow up having to figure it out on our own. And a lot of times it's this negative connotation around money. And this is a way to make it kind of fun and interesting, right? And okay to work out or not work out. And we know the reasons why it does. And it's just okay to just be out there.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a big part of it, like, is just having that clarity on like, well, why? Because a lot of people feel like it's just this big mystery. I don't know why it didn't work out. Well, you probably don't have a framework to make sense of it.
I'll tell you. We can tell you why, right?
We can tell you why.
Send it to us. We'll tell you why it doesn't work out.
Yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. Like with my kids, they're like, well, Dad, this is a good one. He said, yeah, it's a good one. But, you know, the deal is you have to come in with X amount. I'm coming in with X amount. Your X amount doesn't add up right now. So that's not a good one.
Right.
Well, I find a lot of good properties I can't afford. That means I have to say no to them.
Yes. Valuable life lessons.
Right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome, man. Well, what is the next steps? You said you'd love to, you know, look for some more, but obviously we want to get this one performing through the peak season, but what does the future look like?
Yeah. You know, I think that it is kind of keeping the nose to the grindstone, staying in the program and really learning. I think as you're asking this, it's learning to be a good property owner this year.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. I'm the dreamer. I'm the fan, you know, like, but like just focus on learning how to be a good property owner and learn how to work with your property manager and get good at that, because that's a skill set. If you do decide together that you want to do more, you'll use.
Yeah.
And if you don't do more properties, you'll still use that skill set to manage this one well.
Yeah.
So just stay honed in on like, what should I be looking at every month? What should I be looking at semi-annually? What conversations do I need to have?
Love it. I love that you answered it that way. And by the way, you get a gold star for your answer, because it is, I tell people all the time that because I work with our Vodacy family. So, yeah. I mean, we have in my opinion, the most amazing group of investors that has ever been assembled. I mean, it's just an amazing family of investors willing to share the good, the bad, the ugly. There's a lot of type A personalities in there. And so what we typically do is say we buy one and we run to the next one. We want to buy the next one. It's like I'm constantly wanting to do something more. And I'm always trying to pull the reins back and say the most important thing you can do right now, once you buy that first property, is maximize what you have before you move to the next one. And that's exactly what you're saying. It's like, hey, I'm going to learn to be a good property owner. I'm going to maximize this asset and then look for those next steps. And it is for sure the right move, in my opinion, to say, hey, listen, I'm going to maximize everything I've got right now before I move to that next step. And so I love that you answered it that way.
I appreciate that. That is helpful. And it does help slow my own roll, right?
I know how to lie. Trust me, I work with plenty of
I've had this conversation. Personalities
now. I am one, so I get it.
Takes one to know one. Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. I know our drawbacks, but it is very important to maximize what you've got. And I'm really excited to see what this is going to do as you kind of refine it through that slow season. You know, we're a little bit slow season, but there's going to be people who come to the lake on the weekends and enjoy the fall, the winter, and the cooler weather. And you guys have got the property set up beautifully. You guys that listen, you always know I post these properties in the show notes so you can go check them out. And if you're ever in the area in Lake James, go stay at the property, but you can go check those properties out and see what works, how these properties are performing. And again, I'm really excited for you and Ann as you roll into your peak season next summer to really be in that position to maximize that asset and really, you know, get the payoffs of all the hard work that you put in this year and then refine out the kinks throughout that slow season and then really roll in to maximize during your peak season for next summer.
Appreciate it, Sean.
Yeah. Awesome.
We're excited.
Listen, I always give you the last word. If you're going back and starting over, if you've listened to me for a few years, you know, I ask this question, so you better be prepared with an answer. But if you had to go back to the younger self and we had to say, okay, I wish I knew this, or I wish I would have done this different. Or just, you know, whether it's investing advice, life advice, what would that be that you would love to tell your younger self?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I really think my life mission at this point is I love the real estate investing and doing this, but like, you know, my professional call is to say, hey, there's this thing called financial intimacy.
Yeah.
And it means you got to work with your spouse. It's not just the Ed show. You can be a CFP, you can be a money pro, but like that doesn't make you an expert on her and what she wants to do with money. Like you need to learn how to take perspective. And so I would have back so much time, emotional energy, if I just understood the concept of like, if you get married and you're in it together financially and you both have your own financial history with your own stories and you both got to work through that and find a way to find some common ground with care and respect, because otherwise you're just going to be rowing the boat in circles.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love I've never had that answer, by the way. So thank you for I don't get too many original answers because a lot of us have an answer that kind of a version of the same thing, but that is like, couldn't agree more. We talked a lot about that actually on this podcast today of just being on the same page and being able to respect both sides of the coin and understand everybody's got a different view of the world and our spouses are no different, right? We all grew up with different views of the same, you know, the same world, and we need to be able to come to common ground. And these are big decisions. These are big things you're doing together, which is the important point there. And you need to come to those decisions together. And both of you need to be feeling good about it and that it is the right move. So I appreciate that. So if we are saying, hey, listen, I could use a little bit of extra help, where can we point people to find more of Mr. Ed Colton as well, not just the property stuff?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My website for my business is healthyloveandmoney.com. I got a blog, podcast, I've got a book. So like a bunch of free resources, cheap resources, and then professional services. If you're like, yeah, I'll just pay you money. Help me figure this out.
Yeah. I love that. We will put all that in the show notes as well, you guys. And so, you know, it's the number one, you know, cause of split ups and divorces is money problems. And so being able to figure that stuff out together is a big deal. And so, we know where to go now. We got the guy, right? We have to have a guy for everything. So you're our guy for that.
Yeah. So now when that guy says, hey, just convince my wife, you can say, actually, I got a guy for you. He won't actually convince your wife.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. He'll help you with that.
Exactly. I'm not the guy for that, but I've got a guy for that.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, man. Listen, man, I appreciate it. I appreciate you joining us. And tell Ann we missed her for sure, but super excited for both of you. And congrats on the acquisition this year. Congrats on getting it set up and launched. And really excited for you to roll into your next peak season and watch this, your launch through that slow season, get everything ironed out. And I checked out your calendar. It looks like we've still got quite a few bookings even through the slow season, it looks like. Congrats on that. So, all right, guys, we will wrap it up. And those of you listening, we know how valuable your time is. And we always appreciate you spending it with us. It means a lot. We don't run ads or sponsorships on the show. We have been growing a lot lately, thanks to you guys. And so it doesn't happen without you sharing the show, without you liking it, reviewing on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. I want you to know how much we appreciate it. And so the final, most important thing I ask you always at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.